I really didn't care about it. And then when I heard that everybody wanted it, for 40 years they've been trying to get it approved, I said, make sure you don't lose Anwar.
The president says opening the Arctic refuge to oil drilling was a recent priority for him. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, February 1st. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the state's gas line corporation is confident it can get the project approved quickly.
We certainly think that's possible. Where there is a will, there's a way, so we hope there's a will.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The Federal Subsistence Board is accepting applications through February 2nd to fill seats on the 10 Subsistence Regional Advisory Councils. Councils meet at least twice a year and provide critical advice to the board on subsistence management issues. Individuals may apply or nominate someone for membership. More at doi.gov/subsistence/regions or call 800-478-1456. This message is sponsored by the Office of Subsistence Management.
President Trump says he didn't care much about opening the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge to drilling until he found out other presidents had tried to and failed. Alaska Public Media Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin reports on what Trump said today at a Republican retreat in West Virginia about the long fight over whether to allow drilling in the refuge.
And Anwar.
Trump brought up the subject as he recounted his 2017 accomplishments.
And I never appreciated Anwar so much. A friend of mine called up who's in that world and in that business said, is it true that you're thinking about Anwar? I said, yeah, I think we're going to get it. But, you know, he said, are you kidding? That's the biggest thing by itself. He said, Ronald Reagan and every president has wanted to get Anwar approved. And after that, I said, oh, make sure that's in the bill. It was amazing how that had an impact. That had a very big impact on me, Paul.
He seemed to be addressing House Speaker Paul Ryan there. Trump did not identify the friend he credits with turning him around on the importance of opening Anwar.
I really didn't care about it. And then when I heard that everybody wanted it, for 40 years they've been trying to get it approved, I said, make sure you don't lose Anwar.
Trump added that he believes it will be great for the people of Alaska. He also called it one of the great potential fields anywhere in the world. Alaska Wilderness League Director Adam Colton has fought for years to keep the refuge undeveloped. He says the president's casual attitude toward a wild place millions of Americans want to protect is frustrating.
So, yeah, I mean, maybe he's aware that this was a political win, is a political win, that he can chalk up. But does he understand the issue? Does he understand what's at stake? I think the cavalier nature of the comments suggests that he doesn't.
U.S. Senator Dan Sullivan was in the room for Trump's speech. As he tells it, the president has cared about Anwar since at least last March. That's when Sullivan and Senator Lisa Murkowski brought Alaska maps to the Oval Office and briefed Trump for nearly an hour on state issues.
After that meeting, you know, seeing him in different settings and stuff, a number of times, he would ask, hey, Dan, how are we doing on Anwar? Are we going to get that done?
Sullivan spoke from a chartered bus as the congressional Republicans made their way back to the Capitol from West Virginia. He says he's not sure why Trump told the story as he did.
I don't know. I mean, you'll have to ask the president. You know, could have been a playful remark, having a little bit of fun.
Congress approved opening Anwar in its tax overhaul in December. The act calls for 2 lease sales on the coastal plain of the refuge in the next 7 years. Alaska Wilderness League says Congress should repeal the legislation, and environmental lawsuits are almost certain. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
In mid-January, Alaska's Gasline Corporation filed tens of thousands of pages of documents with the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Now the state is waiting for the commission to make a decision on if and when it can get to work on its massive LNG export project. From Alaska's Energy Desk in Juneau, Rasha McChesney gets a progress report from Alaska's Gasline Development Corporation.
Last week, the head of Alaska's Gasline Corporation landed in Juneau for 2 days of meetings with lawmakers and updates on the Alaska LNG project.
All right. Thank you very much. Keith Meyer, president of AGDC.
In between those meetings, Meyer sat down to answer some questions on the federal permitting process. In mid-January, the state corporation announced that it finished several months of work filing responses to questions the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, that's FERC, had on its application for the Alaska LNG project. With those answers, the application is now just shy of 100,000 pages.
Is it like hard copy pages? Or did you guys kill like half a forest having to file?
Fortunately, paper is a renewable resource, but there's three 6-foot high stacks. We've got a photo of those.
Now, Meyer and the corporation are hoping that the Federal Commission will put out a schedule, a timeline, really, for completing that environmental review. But the Federal Commission could just come back to the state with more questions. And the state corporation is on a tight deadline to get that permit. Meyer says he wants to start construction in the second half of 2019. And that schedule is packed with public comment periods, outside review of the project, and there will be other federal agencies that want permits. Some analysts have said it could take years to get through that process. I asked Meyer if it's reasonable to assume that the Federal Commission could get through that regulatory process in 11 months on the largest project in its history.
We certainly think that's possible. Where there is a will, there's a way, so we hope there's a will.
Meyer says huge portions of the project's 800 miles of pipeline have already been studied. The Army Corps of Engineers has been working with the state on another smaller gas pipeline project. Meyer says he wants to use that federal review.
So what we really want FERC to do is take a look at the work done by the Army Corps and use that as the starting point rather than start everything from scratch.
As the state corporation moves forward with the federal regulatory process, Meyer says it has also picked up negotiations with the gas producers on the North Slope. BP, ConocoPhillips, and ExxonMobil were originally partnered with the state in developing this project, but they pulled out in 2016, citing a tough global market. The companies still control the natural gas on the North Slope, a federal export permit, and some of the land needed for the project. The producers have met with Governor Bill Walker in recent weeks, and Meyer says they are motivated to get the pipeline into the ground so they can sell their gas. There are some other potential snags. The Matanuska, Susitna Borough, and City of Valdez are fighting to get the project rerouted. Meyer says he doesn't want to change the project now. As he told lawmakers, this state-led gas line project has already picked a horse to ride, and that's the one it will ride to the finish line. From Alaska's Energy Desk in Juneau, I'm Rasha McChesney.
Governor Bill Walker's administration provided final number on the amount of extra money it plans to spend this year beyond what the legislature budgeted, $178 million. Most of this cost is from Medicaid. Roughly a third of that cost is due to the legislature funding Medicaid at a lower level than state officials' projected costs would run. On top of that, those projections were too low. Officials say more people enrolled in Medicaid due to the recession. Health Commissioner Valerie Davidson described this in a recent Senate Finance Committee meeting.
These are unprecedented times for our state. The downturn in the economy has resulted in more folks enrolling in Medicaid than we anticipated.
Eagle River Republican Senator Anna McKinnon told her that lawmakers are concerned about the spending.
I've heard conversations in the halls of the legislature that this administration, not specific to your department, but including your department, is ignoring the legislature's intent to try to control costs and hold down the operating budget.
Davidson says the costs could not be avoided. Some lawmakers raised the possibility of narrowing Medicaid eligibility. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, an Eagle River history teacher is surprised with a $25,000 award.
It's really nice to have a cash prize with it. I've never won anything before. That I won a bike when I was in second grade. This is way better.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
4 out of 5 Alaskans addicted to heroin started by using prescription opioids. Common opioids include hydrocodone, oxycodone, morphine, fentanyl, and codeine. Safely getting rid of unused opioid medications prevents anyone from taking them without permission, which could endanger them and lead to consequences with law enforcement. Find out more at opioids.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
The state says a Seward police officer was justified in the fatal shooting of a man he had handcuffed and detained in his patrol car in early October. As Alaska Public Media's Casey Grove reports, the man was suspected of having drugs and wriggled into the driver's seat of the police vehicle moments before the shooting.
It was about 1:30 a.m. October 1st when Seward police officer Matthew Eddie Armstrong pulled over the Kia Sportage that Micah McComas was driving.
Evening.
I've never been to Seward before. She just told me you got to slow down right about the time when you swooped in behind us.
Okay, yeah, the reason I stopped here, I got you locked in at 47 in a 35 zone.
Yeah, I didn't know.
In body camera video obtained by the Associated Press through an open records request, Armstrong is heard questioning McComas and his female passenger. He soon learns McComas has a suspended license. Armstrong checks McComas' pockets and wallet for weapons. The officer says he's doing that for safety reasons, because McComas' wallet is large and he wants to put him in the car while he talks to the passenger. But Officer Armstrong notices suspicious baggies in the wallet.
All right, just relax. Are those handcuffs too tight, Micah? All right, I appreciate you being cool with me, man. Keep being cool with me and I'll be cool with you, all right?
Armstrong reads McComas his rights and puts him in the back of the patrol car with his hands cuffed behind his back. According to a report from the State Department of Law, Armstrong suspects McComas is on drugs and is holding drugs.
If you want to contest it, just do it in court, man. That's the way it goes. Have a seat. Micah, have a seat, man.
Dude, I'm a good guy, bro.
I'm not saying you are a bad guy, Micah. Have a seat.
In the video, the officer returns to the Kia to interview the passenger and starts searching her purse. All of a sudden, the patrol car's horn starts honking. According to the state report, McComas is bumping it as he climbs through a partition into the front seat. Armstrong runs to the car, pulls out his gun, and flings open the driver's side door. McComas is now in the driver's seat with his hands still cuffed, but in front of him. Just a warning, what you're going to hear next might be disturbing.
Get out of the car! Don't move!
The video doesn't show the gunshots because the body camera was knocked off as Armstrong lunged into the car. The state report says he fired 5 times and that McComas died from a gunshot to his torso. The report also says while Armstrong performed first aid, he heard McComas say, quote, "I was just trying to get away." The report says investigators later found methamphetamine and heroin on McComas and his blood tested positive for amphetamine.
The suspect did actually shift the vehicle into gear and hit the gas and started taking off.
That's Senior Assistant Attorney General Corey Mills, speaking on behalf of the Department of Law. Mills says McComas' attempt to flee was key to the department's review of Armstrong's actions. In the video, both McComas and Armstrong appear to be white, and the state report does not indicate whether race was a factor in the shooting. The report says after getting struck by the car, Armstrong acted reasonably to protect himself and others as McComas attempted to steal the vehicle, which had other firearms in the trunk.
So under those circumstances, it was reasonable for the officer to believe that the use of deadly force was necessary, and as a result, criminal charges are inappropriate in this case.
Seward's city attorney says Armstrong followed police policy and that the police department has its own review planned. The attorney, Will Earnhardt, says the city is proud of Officer Armstrong for showing professionalism, but added that city officials have deep sympathy for McComas' family. McComas' sister told the Associated Press she thinks it's suspicious that the body camera video does not show the shooting, and she wonders why so many shots were fired. The AP reports she is traveling to Alaska to meet with officials and view the video. According to the State Office of Special Prosecutions and Appeals, the office reviewed a total of 13 cases involving law enforcement officers using lethal or potentially lethal force in 2017. In Anchorage, I'm Casey Grove.
The Anchorage Police Department is partnering with the U.S. Army to help find jobs for soldiers after their military service. Police Chief Justin Dahl signed an agreement with the Army's Recruitment Division today, formalizing the partnership. Dahl himself was enlisted in the Marine Corps before becoming a police officer. The Army program gives veterans a foot in the door to future employment by guaranteeing job interviews at organizations that have signed on, among other benefits. It includes public agencies like the APD and academic institutions, as well as corporations and other private companies. According to a written statement, the police department's recruiters expect to have access to a pool of highly skilled, motivated, and professional job candidates. The Iditarod sled dog race is in trouble. That's the finding from a confidential report looking into the financial sustainability and leadership of the race's governing body. As Alaska Public Media's Zachariah Hughes reports, Iditarod officials are planning to implement a series of reforms later this year, but not until after the race wraps up in March.
The December report was put together by the Foraker Group and was commissioned by the race's main corporate sponsors. The Iditarod Trail Committee has received waves of criticism the last few years over controversial new policies, loss of sponsors, and a high-profile doping scandal many feel was mishandled. The document's existence was first reported by blogger Craig Medred earlier this week. In interviews with board members, staff, sponsors, and mushers, along with a review of financial documents and policies, Foraker concludes the Iditarod's relationship with key stakeholders is severely damaged. It finds mushers don't have confidence in the ITC board, and that without internal reforms, sponsors aren't likely to continue supporting the event. That's a big threat to Alaska's premier sled dog race because most of the Iditarod's revenues come from corporate sponsorship. The Foraker report notes that the annual event depends heavily on unpaid volunteer labor and questions whether that model is financially sustainable. The author also says the handling of the recent doping incident exacerbated mistrust of the board among mushers and gave ammo to animal rights activists who have long criticized the event and pushed sponsors to drop support. Through its public relations firm, Iditarod officials declined a request for an interview, but in 4 pages of comments sent to Alaska Public Media, ITC's board commits to making reforms that will make the race viable long term. In Anchorage, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
The state of Alaska briefly appeared ready to help the city and borough of Juneau defend itself in a federal lawsuit brought by the cruise ship industry. But as KTOO's Jacob Resnick reports, state lawyers withdrew within 24 hours.
The Alaska Attorney General's Office filed a 19-page brief in federal court defending Juneau's fees on cruise ships and passengers. The state attorney followed up with a 4-page brief explaining why the state takes an interest in the case. It argued that the outcome of the lawsuit could impact the state's own $5 per cruise ship passenger fee, which has survived past legal challenges from the industry. That was Tuesday. On Wednesday, the state pulled its briefs and asked to be withdrawn from the case. Alaska Department of Law spokeswoman Corey Mills released a short statement. It said the original motion was filed in error due to internal miscommunications. She wouldn't elaborate.
We're trying to figure out what that means, and we're scratching our heads a little bit.
That's Juneau City Manager Roy Watt. He says the passenger fees in Juneau and other communities are similarly structured. That means the lawsuit's outcome in Juneau could set a wider precedent.
You know, we are defending our actions in the lawsuit, and we think that our fees and Ketchikan's fees and the state's fees are legally similar, and we're waiting to see what their next step is.
At stake is millions in cruise ship passenger and port development fees on vessels that call in Juneau during the busy cruise season. In Juneau alone, that's about $13 million when local and state fees are added together. That's why Juneau has spent more than $600,000 in legal defense since the lawsuit was filed in 2016. In filings late last year, the cruise industry argued that the fees violated clauses of the U.S. Constitution that prohibit taxes on shipping. The case is headed to trial. Juneau City Attorney Amy Mead said her office will continue to coordinate the city's legal defense. She found the state's on and off maneuver puzzling.
I don't know why it was withdrawn or what process hadn't been followed or what they felt they needed to do. I don't know if perhaps they're thinking of refiling it or if they've just made a decision that this is not a direction they want to go in, but it won't really impact how we proceed in our defense.
The Department of Law's statement added that the federal lawsuit doesn't directly implicate the state's own cruise ship passenger fee. That assertion directly contradicts its own legal arguments filed fleetingly in federal court. In Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Did you know while exposed to secondhand smoke, every breath you take can damage your heart? Cells lining blood vessels become swollen and inflamed. Plaque builds narrowing blood vessels and clots can form, robbing the heart of oxygen. Exposure to secondhand smoke increases your heart disease risk by up to 30%. It's your heart protected. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline. 1-800-QUIT-NOW.
Most people think of high school history class and remember lengthy lectures about people who've been dead for hundreds of years. But a teacher at Eagle River High School does things differently. Today, she received an award that's been described as the Oscars of teaching. As Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early reports, at the award assembly, she was praised for injecting enthusiasm into her lectures and passion into her students.
This year's Alaska Milken educator is Val Balrud.
Valerie Balrud was sitting near her students in an assembly, waiting to hear a talk from State Education Commissioner Michael Johnson. Then the topic of the Milken Educator Award came up. The prestigious award comes with a $25,000 check from the foundation.
I was totally shocked. I was talking with some students about who we thought it might be. We were all sort of making our bets. And then at least one of those students had me. And she said, well, I think it could be you, Miss Ballard. And I said, oh, I laughed and said, well, I could always find a way to spend that money or something. And then they said my name. I was like, oh, no. And she goes, I knew it.
Ballard grew up in small town Pennsylvania. She says her hometown of Granville Summit has a population of about 60. She jokes there are more cows than people. She says she's always been a history nerd and picked up teaching as a career because her first husband was in the military, and wherever the family moved, teaching jobs were available. She ended up settling in Eagle River with her family and has been at Eagle River High School for 8 years. Eagle River High Principal Marty Lang says Ballard earned the award.
She is whip smart. Her energy is so infectious that when she's in front of a classroom, kids just can't help but love what she's doing and love history. She brings that every day to every class. It doesn't matter at what level. She is just such a dynamic teacher and a great ambassador for education that she's more than deserving.
The real purpose of the assembly was a surprise to almost everyone at the school. Lang was among a very small group of people who knew about the award.
That's the hardest part. I found out sometime, I think, in mid-December. And so for 2 months, I've been having to hold on to this secret that is so much fun.
Ballard employs some creative teaching techniques. In an economics class today, she incorporated a concept from the TV program Stranger Things to explain price floors and price ceilings. She also has her AP World History students describe their favorite historical events for their final exams. In the past, she's had her students create 1920s-style radio shows. Ballard's dedication goes way beyond the classroom.
I've done everything here at the school itself. I've taught flag football. I was the head coach for a while. I coached DDF, drama, debate, and forensics. I've coached track and field. I've done a little bit of everything, and I think that's really important as a teacher to get to know your students outside of the classroom as well as in, and I've really enjoyed doing that.
Ballard says she plans to spend the award money on an upcoming family trip this summer.
It's really nice to have a cash prize with it. I've never won anything before. I won a bike when I was in second grade. This is way better.
Ballard is one of 44 recipients of the Milken Educator Award this year and the sole Alaska Award winner. In Anchorage, I'm Wesley Early.
Side Street Espresso in downtown Anchorage has been a great place for a good espresso and a daily dose of commentary for decades. Husband and wife owners George G. and Deborah Seaton have doled out coffee and bake treats for years. George is also an artist. He started drawing on a whiteboard that featured daily drink specials to give customers something interesting to look at. Those drawings are inspired by his inner social and political contemplations and are now collected in a new book, Flutters from Side Street, Volume 1.
For the last year and a half, I haven't been walking to work from home, but for most of these years, we've been there 25 years, and for most of those years I would walk. And just in that quiet time of walking, I'm talking like 4 in the morning, and there's nobody on the streets, no cars. In that quiet time, things evolve in your head.
Volume 1 is out now, Flutters from Side Street. Do you have favorites in this first collection, or is that like kind of asking which one of your kids is your favorite?
It's kind of like that. There's some that I feel closer to, I guess, than others. There's ones like the dinosaur one, the good old days. That one I feel close to. The very last drawing in here is genderqueer and has to do with my son and I dealing with that issue, or me dealing with my issue concerning it. And That's a really important one, because when you go into the textuary area, you see that that really was influential in some changes I was learning about myself. It is like, drawing for me is like, and you see it in that last section, like a therapist is that sometimes it's just a passing thing, and sometimes it's deep.
Describe for us the dinosaur.
I know which one you're talking about.
The dinosaur drawing.
Yeah. Well, it's a picture of a skeleton T-Rex head, and it's titled The Good Old Days, and let me just read its brief. I think only dinosaurs, like me, perhaps unknowingly already extinct, reminisce the good old days before money became the standard for truth, honor, justice, morality, and excellence, before television became the standard for family time, and before violence was all that could excite our passions. That's the dinosaur one. But, you know, the main focus is on the, is political and social. I considered not 9/11, but the response we made to 9/11 to be the most significant watershed geopolitical event of the 21st century. And so there's a lot of focus on that. And we're still experiencing, I mean, the boundaries and the leadership in the Middle East has changed, but it's also happening in Europe now that the migration is happening and such. Drawing is where I started with these images. I quickly moved to also making comments. And once I did that, it became a voice. And so this is my voice coming from Side Street.
Today is George's 76th birthday, and tomorrow evening at a First Friday event at Side Street, a combination birthday party and book launch will take place. Links to the book are at our website, alaskapublic.org. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can find us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Rasha McChesney, Jacob Resnick, and Andrew Kitchenman in Juneau, and Casey Grove and Zachariah Hughes in Anchorage. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
ACPE's education loan refinance can save you money and give you just one bill for all your private, state, and federal loans. The Alaska Refinance Loan offers Alaska residents a 4.95% interest rate with no fees. You choose between a 5, 10, or 15-year plan. Go to acpe.alaska.gov/radio or call 1-800-441-2962. This message sponsored by Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education.
One of the greatest honors for a public media station is delivering on its promise to provide quality programming and news you can trust to the communities it serves. What you hear on air is the result of a dedicated team working together to bring you the best. It's a privilege to be a part of your day. Thank you for listening, for your feedback, and for your support. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.